And welcome once again to EW10's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Happy to have author Steve Mosier with us. His book, The Devil and Communist China, From Mao Down to Xi, published by our friends at TAN, available likewise through the EW10 Religious Catalog. Great to have you, Steve.
Good to be with you again.
Always good. People will remember seeing you on with Father Mitch, talking about this particular topic, The Devil and Communist China. Now, you've always been associated in many ways with dealing with population control, population research, and China. Are they all connected?
Well, they are. I mean, I'm the president of the Population Research Institute, which was an organization founded in 1989 by Father Paul Marx.
Oh, sure.
And Father was very
interested. Human Life International at the
Human
time.
Life International was founded by Father Marx, and a lot of groups around the world got their start with the great Father Marx. Benedictine monk who joined the Benedictines and saw the world. So I went to China at the very beginning of the one-child policy. Mm-hmm. I was in China in 1979, a long time ago now. And when I was there, the Chinese government decided, because it had been reading Western reports about the dangers of overpopulation,
Paul Ehrlich and stuff like that, the population bomb, all of the Western nonsense
about the fact that we were breeding ourselves off the face of the planet, that people should stop having children. Mm-hmm. The Chinese Communist Party saw that and thought, oh, we'd better cut back on our population growth too, and they instituted the one-child policy, right, which resulted in the deaths of, over time, 400 million unborn children. So I was there observing that firsthand, and that I think is probably the best example of the evil that the Chinese Communist Party has wrought when it comes to the Chinese people. I mean, tens of millions of Chinese have died at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party.
Right, which you illustrate through in the book.
Which is in the book.
Places, right.
But the biggest killing spree of all was the one-child policy that ran from 1980 to 2016. Because in that campaign, 400 million unborn children were sacrificed. Half of the last two generations of Chinese.
And most of those would be girls, right?
A lot of them would be girls.
Because they
want to
have a son,
right? The majority would be girls,
right?
Because they would use ultrasounds to determine the sex of the unborn child. And if it was a little girl, they would have an abortion because they preferred sons. Mm-hmm. So the one-child policy plus the preference for sons resulted in the killing of tens of millions of newborn and unborn baby girls. There's a huge disparity between the sexes in China today because of that. But there's a larger problem here, and the larger problem is the Chinese Communist Party is, as I say in the book, the biggest killing machine in human history. Mm-hmm. We talk about the 20 million people who were killed by the Russian
Stalin,
Soviets,
right,
under Stalin,
right,
and Lenin. Mm-hmm. We talk about the 14 million who were killed by Hitler. We talk about the destruction in Cambodia under Pol Pot.
Right.
The number of people who died in China as a direct result of the Chinese Communist Party's misrule is staggering. You've got the anti-rightist campaigns of the 1950s targeting capitalists, targeting former members of the nationalist regime, targeting anyone who disagrees with Chairman Mao and the Communist Party. You've got the famine after the Great Leap Forward, where 45 million people died. The biggest killing machine in human history is the Chinese Communist Party, and it always has to have an enemy, you see. It has to have an enemy to distract the people from the righteous anger they feel about the fact that their freedoms have been taken away. And so there's a 2 minutes of hate, basically, going on in China all the time, directed towards this group or that group. But in 1980, for the first time in the history of Marxism-Leninism, they targeted a new group, not the landlords, not the capitalists. They targeted the unborn children. And they said the unborn children are the enemies of the state. The unborn children are the enemies of progress in the future. The unborn children are standing in the way of you and China's greatness.
Well,
and so in the name of China's greatness,
they were happy to use starvation as well, as you talk about in the book, very much as Stalin used in Ukraine.
So unborn children became the enemies of the state.
Right.
And the death toll at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party, the biggest killing machine in human history, 500 million.
Right. And you talk about the defining character here, as Paul Kengor, who wrote the foreword, talks about the idea that it's mass murder is really what the focus is. And you say the pernicious idea that man could create his own heaven on earth is quite simply the most deadly idea ever conceived in the history of the world. Why is that so deadly? It sounds great.
Why is it? Well, I think it's a modern day example of the ancient temptation mm-hmm. of the serpent to Adam and Eve in the garden. You will eat of the tree of the fruit of knowledge, and you shall be as gods, and the world will be yours, and you can redesign it however you wish. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? That's what Marx said in the Communist Manifesto. We will take control of our own destiny. We will be as gods, and we will create heaven on earth. And of course, what they always do in their attempt to create heaven on earth is create hell on earth.
Right.
And life in communist China under Mao and for unborn children in the decades after mm-hmm. that was hell. It was death and destruction.
Well, you said communist regimes did not just commit criminal acts, observes Professor Martin Malia of the University of California, Berkeley, but they were criminal enterprises in their very essence, on principle, so to speak. They all ruled ruthlessly by violence and without regard for human life.
Absolutely. Everyone knows the famous saying of Chairman Mao, right? That political power comes from the barrel of a gun. But he also said that morality comes from the gun. Mm-hmm. So he was willing to use his power, his control mm-hmm. over the People's Liberation Army, all the guns in China belonged to him, to define what morality was, to define good and evil. And he's one of the most evil men in human history, Doug. I mean, if you look at him through the lens of Catholic morality, as I do, look at him through the lens of the Ten Commandments, every time he faced a choice in life between good and evil, every time he faced a choice on how to achieve an end, should I achieve an end by, mm-hmm. by speaking directly, honestly, and openly about it, or using deception and deceit and murder? He always chose deceit and deception. He always chose you could call it the satanic path, the demonic path.
He died. He died in 1976. You meant the fact that he went to be with Marx in 76. Where do you think he went?
Well, I don't think we're
not allowed to predict that.
We are not allowed to say who the occupants of hell are. But if he went to be with Marx, I'm pretty sure they're in a dark place,
dark place. What about the genocidal attacks on the Uyghurs? We hear about them once in a while. Who are they, and why are they persecuting them?
Well, the Uyghurs are a Turkish-speaking people mm-hmm. who live in the far west of China. They speak a language not all that far distant from Turkish, okay. spoken in Turkey. And they've been there for thousands of years, okay? This is a part of China called the New Territory. Why is it called the New Territory? Because it was not historically part of the Chinese-speaking part of China.
Okay.
Xi Jinping, the new Red Emperor, the guy who in all respects is modeling himself on Mao.
Yeah, you make that point, too, that yeah. and how Mao, in a sense, modeled themselves over the legalistic approach
yes.
in China that allowed them to have that emperor kind of situation.
Mao modeled himself on the worst Chinese emperors who ever existed,
right.
and Xi Jinping, the current leader, is modeling himself on Mao, which does not bode well for anybody in China,
right.
but least of all for minorities, like the Uyghurs, but not just the Uyghurs. You see, it's the Mongols, it's the Manchus, it's the Tibetans. All minorities in China are being told by the Chinese Communist Party that they must become model Chinese citizens. They must abandon their own language, mm-hmm. their own culture, and they are being forced in various ways to become Sinified, mm-hmm. to become Chinese, to be proper Han Chinese-speaking Chinese who are obedient to the Chinese Communist Party and its leader, Xi Jinping. And that destruction is going mm-hmm. on even as we speak. There is genocide mm-hmm. among the Uyghurs in China today. They've locked up 1.5 million of the men. They put Chinese police to live with the women and children left behind.
Mm-hmm.
in the same home. They are taking the children away and putting them in orphanages where they're only allowed to speak Chinese, mm-hmm. not allowed to speak the Turkish language of their birth. And so it's a deliberate mm-hmm. destruction of an entire people. And it extends beyond the Uyghurs, as I said, to the mm-hmm. Tibetans, the Mongols, other minorities. They're trying to homogenize the whole population quickly because they think in that way they can foster loyalty to China and to the Chinese Communist Party.
Is that why there's this such a reaction against, in a sense, looking like, especially the Catholic Church, as being something from the outside, that it's not Chinese and it needs to be made Chinese.
That's right. It needs to be sinified. But what sinification means in this case is not just using Chinese as the language of the liturgy, mm-hmm. not just having Chinese priests and bishops. We've had that already.
Right.
We've had that now for a century. What it means is using the church in China as a vehicle to promote the Chinese Communist Party, the party line, the party ideology of socialism with Chinese characteristics, and also the party leader, Xi Jinping. That's what it means. It means turning the church into an arm of the Chinese Communist Party.
Are they trying to make it a spiritual experience, in a sense, for these people, the party itself, to take on some of that?
The whole idea of Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist, now I regard communism as a quasi-cult,
right,
a quasi-religious cult,
okay,
right? It has its own eschatology. It has its own conception of how the world should be and what the end times will look like, where everyone will be equal and the government will fade away. It's all a fantasy, by the way, and it leads to terror and death and destruction, but that's what they say. Xi Jinping has in mind to create a kind of Church of China, to foster hyper-nationalism so that he can take the love of China, which is quite natural, patriotism is natural, and use it as a means to solidify his rule.
I see.
So the Church of China, in which everyone is supposed to be sitting quietly in the pews, repeating what the party says, where the acolytes in the church are the 94 million members of the Chinese Communist Party, and where the head of the church is Xi Jinping himself.
Right.
That's the model that's being used.
Now, he used to quote a common Chinese expression. You can explain this to me. I am a monk holding an umbrella. I have neither hair or heaven. Please explain what that means.
Well, monks have tonsures, and in China they do as well. And he had neither hair nor heaven. Wu fa wu tian. Okay. But wu fa means no hair, but it also means without law. And wu tian means no heaven. So he said openly, and this is what it means in Chinese, the Chinese idiom, it means, I respect neither law nor heaven. In other words, he rejected God, and he rejected the law. And of course, one leads to the other. If you reject God, of course, then you reject the natural law that God plants in the human heart. And he thought he could create his own law. He was the law unto himself. He said once as a young man, stated very clearly his philosophy, and it was this, that there are other people and things in the world, Mao Zedong said, but they only exist for my use and for my pleasure. Imagine that, as if he were some kind of demigod come down from Mount Olympus and people were just pieces on a chessboard to be moved around and taken off the board whenever he wanted.
He had a bad relationship with his father, didn't he also?
Oh, he was rebellious from the beginning. He violated all the Confucian precepts, right, which were that sons are to obey their father. He disobeyed his father from a very young age. And all of the Buddhist precepts where you're to love other people and not harm life, he violated that with impunity. He rejected all the laws that were written in the human heart and went his own way. And the killing spree that resulted is just staggering.
You say, for Mao, nothing was sacred except his own being. You go on to say, the question we must ask about a dark soul like him, if Mao and his ilk had explicitly made a Faustian bargain with the devil, would they have done or said or done it anything differently than they did do? Clearly the answer is no.
Clearly the answer is no. I cannot find in reading countless, I mean, I've been at this for 40 years, read countless biographies of Mao. There was never a point in time where he chose good over evil that I can identify. So if he didn't make a conscious pact with the devil, he might as well have, because he wouldn't have behaved any differently had he been directly under the sway of the devil.
You say in the chapter, The Specter That's Haunting Europe, you say, bearing false witness like mass murder is one of communism's chief characteristics. How so?
Mass murder. Mass murder without a conscience. I mean, the millions of people who were killed as soon as Mao took power, the campaign against the landlords, where anyone who owned a little more land than they could farm themselves was called a landlord. And they were struggled and tortured and in many cases killed. 10 million right there. Anyone who was associated with the nationalist regime, millions of people died.
Right.
Anyone who had a gun in their home and didn't turn it in to the Chinese Communist Party was automatically executed because they were considered to be a counter-revolutionary. You couldn't have weapons. The party has a monopoly on weapons. And then, of course, the communist communes that Mao set up in the late 1950s, the great proletarian people's communes.
Based on really what the Soviet Union had done.
Based on what the Soviet Union did, but based on what Marx said in the Communist Manifesto, where he said we need to set up industrial farms and treat people in the countryside like we do factory workers. So he tried to create a factory out of the 2 million villages in China's countryside where 400 million villagers live. He forced them all into communes. A couple million people were killed in that process because they didn't want to join the commune. They didn't want to give up their own land. Right. They were executed. And then, of course, everyone was told, you can eat in the communal kitchen for free. We'll farm the land in common. You don't need to keep your own cookware at home because you'll eat in the communal kitchens for free. Well, the food ran out after about a year. Mm-hmm. They couldn't go home and eat because they had no food at home and they had no woks at home. The woks had all been destroyed. And 45 million people died. And you know what Mao said? Mao said, right. Deaths are good. They fertilize the ground.
Right, right.
He said, it's better if half the people die so that the other half can eat
live.
Their fill.
Right, yeah, right.
He said, let them eat grass and the bark of trees.
Right.
That was his view. Right. When massive numbers of his own people, his fellow Chinese, were dying around right. him.
He didn't look like he missed any meals, though, from what
no,
I can tell.
No, no, no. He was a chubby.
And
he
apparently
guy.
Liked a lot of young girls there, too, apparently.
Yeah. He read at one point about the mythical Yellow Emperor who lived 5,000 years ago, who supposedly achieved immortality by sleeping with 1,000 virgins. Mao, in his 60s, had his secret police go out to the villages and bring in innocent 13, 14, 15-year-old girls night after night for years. Right. Now, Mao didn't achieve immortality. He died, like everyone is going to, right. in 1976. But in the course of I don't know what you'd call it, that debauchery, hundreds of innocent village girls had their innocence destroyed. Mm-hmm. And after he used them, he simply sent them back to their village. He abandoned them.
Yeah. Well, he was finished using them. It's all utilitarianism, right? Godless to the core, you say the social justice Christians who even today still believe that it's possible to reconcile communism and Christianity would not have received a warm welcome from Karl Marx himself. In Marx's opinion, social principles of Christianity preach cowardice, self-contempt, abasement, submission, humility. So much for the social principles. And would you say that's all reflective also in Mao's
Oh,
and
absolutely. Mao had only disdain for religious belief. He called Catholic missionaries, he called them terrorists. Mm-hmm. He compared Catholic missionaries, many of whom gave their lives for the purpose of converting the Chinese over the last couple of centuries. He compared them to Nazis. Mm-hmm. He had, at the root of communism is a hatred of God.
Right.
And Mao didn't just reject God. He rejected the divine law. He rejected everything good and true and beautiful, and right. what resulted, evil and ugliness.
Now, one of the things that you say, if it wasn't for, in a sense, the Japanese invasion of China, this may not have happened now, because basically the nationalists took on the fight with the Japanese, and Mao did his long march and kind of stayed out of it until everything was over, right?
Oh, well, Mao played it perfectly because when the Japanese invaded China, Mao pretended to be fighting the Japanese, but actually built up his red base areas, mm-hmm. while the bulk of the fighting, 98% of the fighting, was done by the nationalists.
Yeah.
Now,
before
the Japanese invasion, Chiang Kai-shek, who was a Christian, mm-hmm. had unified most of China, and things were moving in the right direction. Had the Japanese not invaded China, the communists would have been destroyed, and China would be a much different place today, a much freer place. All of China would look like Taiwan. And what does Taiwan have? Freedom of speech, mm-hmm. freedom of association, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience. It's very sad that China fell to communism with the help of the Soviet Union.
So what was the great leap forward? That was you talked about earlier.
The great leap forward, yes. The great leap forward was when Mao decided that China was going to overtake Great Britain in steel production mm-hmm. in 3 years. And so millions and millions of Chinese were sent out to cut down trees. They didn't have coal, so they cut down trees to use as fuel. They built backyard smelters out of bricks, and they threw in their woks and anything iron, their plows and everything, into the backyard smelters and produced useless pig iron, which all had to be re-smelted. That was the great leap forward. It involved, of course, the commune system that resulted in these tens of millions of deaths. And it destroyed the Chinese rural economy right. for a generation.
Now, who were the Red Guard, and what was the Cultural Revolution?
The Red Guard. Well, you see, the Great Leap Forward had left Mao with a problem. A lot of the other leaders in the Chinese Communist Party said to Mao, you destroyed the rural economy, you killed tens of millions of people. How is history going to remember us? Well, Mao never forgot a slight, and he didn't like the fact that people criticized his rule. So he maneuvered and encouraged young people in 1966 to revolt against the party of the other party leaders, and he told them that they have to root out the snakes and the devils in the Chinese Communist Party. Well, it turned out that the people who were targeted by the Red Guards were all Mao's political enemies. Mm-hmm. The then premier was arrested by the Red Guards, tortured, and killed. General Peng Dahuai, who had criticized Mao in 1958 because of the Great Leap Forward, but hadn't really opposed Mao, just said, you know, maybe we've gone a little bit too far. Mao never forgot a slight. Mm-hmm. He had Peng Dahuai arrested, tortured, and he died in prison some years later. Peng had actually saved his life during the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter to Mao. Once you crossed him, he never forgot a slight. And even Zhou Enlai, people will remember Zhou Enlai,
yeah,
the
certainly.
Premier of China.
Yeah, right.
He had once questioned Mao's leadership back in 1936. Mao never forgot a slight. And so in the early 1970s, Zhou developed bladder cancer. The doctors came to Mao, Chairman Mao, and said, Premier Zhou has bladder cancer. What should we do? Mao said, don't treat it. Don't tell him he has bladder cancer. Let it spread.
Mm-hmm.
And so Zhou Enlai died in agony several years later. Why? Because Mao would not allow him to be treated. Despite 40 years of faithful service, you see,
right.
Zhou had made the mistake of once speaking out against Mao Zedong.
Right, that can't
be tolerated.
And that
was a death sentence for him.
One thing I wanted, I alluded to the term legalism. And you say Chinese early rulers were guided by their quest of power by a school of Chinese Machiavellis. So it's interesting, this Machiavellian thing that's in there wasn't just in Italy, collectively called legalists. And again, I alluded to the fact that the emperor's legalist credo was that a wise prince doesn't ask his subjects to behave well. He uses methods to prevent them from behaving badly.
Well, Mao's model emperor, the one he looked at and admired and sought to emulate, was the first emperor of the Qin Dynasty, the guy who in 220 BC unified all of China. Mm-hmm. How did he do it? He used legalist principles, which is sort of a proto-totalitarianism, a sort of an early communism. Legalism says you must have a standing army, you must have political commissars in the army to watch over the generals so they don't get politically ambitious, you have concentration camps, the concentration camps in China built the Great Wall, you have propaganda troops around the country singing the praises of the emperor, you burn the books of competing scholars, so you kill the followers of Confucius and Mencius, and that's how you rule your country. Oh, you control the production of salt and iron. Iron, especially because iron can be used to make weapons. So you had a form of early communism in China over 2,000 years ago. That was Mao's model. So when Mao, as a young man in 1920, was looking to see what he could use to gain power in China, he saw the Russian Revolution and he seized upon it because there was a sort of harmony, there were resonances between the way Russia was doing things under communism and the way things had been done in ancient China under the first emperor of the Qin Dynasty. So he was really more of a legalist than a communist.
Right. So also the idea, sometimes we talk about the spirituality and the devil and these kind of things, and there's some connection with something with him being anointed or to shine on what his nickname was from his mother, and he has some sort of baptism with a stone or something. Explain that.
He did. When he was a boy, his mother took him out to a stone god not far from the village where they were living, and she rebaptized him. Now, his birth name was Mao Zedong, which means Mao, the light of the East, interestingly enough.
Okay.
But he was rechristened to be the third son of the monolith, Shusan Yanzi. And the third son of the monolith, the third son of stone, he was forced to kneel in front of this stone god and kowtow, knocking his head on the ground 9 times, and given a new name. I think it's very interesting that that happened because you don't want to contract with any sort of spirit for help in this world. That can end very badly, right? That opens you to demonic influence, to diabolical influences. And it's as if the man had a heart of stone.
Right.
He felt no compassion for his fellow Chinese.
Well, you have the quotes as you had earlier.
And the quotes I had earlier. And then going back to the commune system, when he forced these 400 million villagers into the commune system, he said, it would be best if we took away everyone's name and just gave them a number.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes it clear that what he was setting up was really a giant prison camp, right? Mm-hmm. An open-air prison camp. He never actually moved on that idea, but the fact that he had that idea to take away the individual identities of the Chinese people and replace it with a number shows you how he thought of his fellow Chinese. They were just the masses. They were just groups of people to be manipulated and sometimes targeted and killed.
Right, whatever was utility for him. When he I thought this was interesting, back in the 50s, when he traveled by train, Mao would see miles and miles of thriving crops along the tracks, unaware they had been just planted there by peasants the day before. When Mao visited the model commune, he saw piles of vegetables, and I told them they had so many they didn't know what to do with it. When it was all made up.
It was all made up. It was all a Potemkin village. It was all a fantasy. No local officials wanted to tell Chairman Mao that his idea for setting up communes and forcing all of the farmers of China to give up their family farms and farm the land in common was a bad idea. So they all engaged in the pretense that the emperor had closed when he actually didn't.
Well, near the end you say, the devil and Chinese communism, match made in hell. You quote Mao, communism is not love. Communism is a hammer we use to crush the enemy.
And that is the one thing that he had in common with Archbishop Fulton Sheen, the great evangelist of the last century, once said that for the first time in human history, we have an ideology based not on love, but on hate, and it's communism. And Mao agreed. Mao said that communism is not love. It is a hammer that we use to destroy the enemy. And he destroyed many, many Chinese. You know, I want to tell you how why I wrote the book. And I wrote the book because, you see, when I was at Stanford, I was taught that communism was a good thing. We had university professors there who were open Maoists. They admired Mao. They admired the commune system. They knew nothing about it, of course. They'd never been there. They were 5,000 miles away. They couldn't speak, write, read, or write Chinese. But nonetheless, people like John Gurley, the economist John Gurley, people like the economist Donald Harris, who is Vice President Harris's father, were great admirers of Mao. I got there and I saw that it was all a fantasy, it was all a fabrication, it was all a lie, and this was a terroristic regime. And I want people to know that. Right. And not just the people who watch this show. You see, in 1980, when I was at Stanford and later in China, this sort of poisonous idea was limited basically to colleges and universities. Right. Now it has percolated down to high schools and junior high schools. Children, you know, your children and grandchildren need to read this book. They've been miseducated about socialism.
Well, we're seeing more and more. We have our own Red Guard that's showing up in our high schools and colleges.
This is the antidote to those poisonous ideas.
Well, we appreciate you stopping by and talking about it and writing the book, Steve.
Thank you.
It's good to see you again. Steve Mosier, the author of The Devil and Communist China, From Mao Down to Xi, and published by Tan. And I tell you, it's definitely an intriguing book, worth the read, eye-opening, and available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. We'll catch you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.